I was born in 1945. As a youthful correspondent, I lived for almost 2 years in America and later repeatedly visited Indochina. My understanding was so meagre, my perceptions so callow, that in the text that follows I shall not allude to personal experiences, instead summarising them here. In 1967-68, I travelled widely in the US, first on a journalistic study fellowship and latterly as a reporter during the presidential election campaign. I had brief encounters with many of the major players, including Robert Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Eugene McCarthy, Barry Goldwater, Hubert Humphrey, Ronald Reagan, and Harrison Salisbury, Norman Mailer, Allen Ginsberg, Joan Baez. In January 1968, I was among a group of foreign journalists who visited the White House. Seated in the cabinet room, we were harangued for 40 minutes by President Lyndon Johnson about his commitment to Vietnam, weeks before he stunned the American people by announcing that he would not run for re-election. That morning, his personality seemed no less formidable for being close to the caricature. "Some of you like blondes, some of you like redheads, and some of you maybe don't like women at all," he declared in that deadweight drawl, gesticulating constantly to emphasize his points and making broad pencil strokes on a notepad before him. "I'm here to tell you what kind I like. I'm prepared to meet Ho Chi Minh anytime in a nice hotel with nice food, and we can sit down and talk to settle this thing." After making his pitch, this big man left the room abruptly without taking questions, merely loosing a Parthian shaft at anti-war columnist Walter Lippmann. We had risen and were gathering our notes when suddenly the president put his head round the door again. "Now, before you all go," he said, almost coyly, "I want to ask, do any of you feel any different from anything you read or heard about me before you came?" We were stunned into inarticulacy by this glimpse of Johnson's awesome vulnerability. In 1970, I presented a series of reports for BBC TV's 24 Hours programme from Cambodia and Vietnam, then returned in the following year to do more of the same, interviewing Vietnam's president and also visiting Laos. Later that year, in Beijing's Great Hall of the People, I shook the hand of Zhou Enlai. In 1973 and 74, I travelled again in Vietnam, and in 75 reported the final campaigns, including the shambles of Da Nang just before its fall, later from around Saigon. I intended to remain among the handful of correspondents covering the North Vietnamese takeover. On the afternoon of the final day, however, I lost my nerve, forced a path through the mob of terrified Vietnamese around the US embassy, and scrambled over its wall with some assistance from the Marine defenders. A few hours later, I was evacuated in a Jolly Green Giant to the USS Midway. The above episodes yielded immature journalism, but today lend personal colouring to my descriptions below of the sweat-soaked, dust-clinging, bomb-happy boondocks, as Vietnamese, French, and American fighters knew them. In later years, I met Robert McNamara, Henry Kissinger, other giants of the Vietnam era. Arthur Schlesinger became a friend. All wars are different, and yet the same. A myth has grown up, in the US at least, that Vietnam inflicted unique horrors on its participants, attested in countless veterans' anguished gropings into poetry. Yet anyone who lived through Rome's Carthaginian struggles, the Thirty Years' War in Europe, Napoleon's campaigns in Russia, or the 1916 Somme battles, would mock the notion that Indochina offered qualitatively worse experiences. The violence that men inflicted with spears and swords, or unleashed on innocents in the path of armies, was as ghastly in the 2nd century AD as in the 20th. An attacker set afire by burning oil poured from the walls of a medieval city suffered as terribly as one who fell victim to napalm. Looting,